Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. If you live in New York City, you may remember this tragic story from the news, or you may not. It changed lives. A two-year-old girl, we would all learn her name was Greta, was sitting on a bench with her maternal grandmother on the Upper West Side. And in a moment, everything changed. Out of nowhere, a brick fell from eight stories. A windowsill had suddenly crumbled. Both Greta and her grandmother were injured. The two-year-old was struck in the head, and Greta died in the hospital shortly afterwards. Writer Jason Green is Greta's dad. His new memoir, Once More We Saw Stars, is figuratively and literally partly a love letter to his daughter. It also gets very real about grief and pain and how we all experience it differently and how no one or no thing can really take it away. In the book, Jason recounts how he and his wife, Stacy, live through the initial torture, keep their marriage intact, and they have another child, all while honoring Greta's memory. Jason Green is here with us in studio. Jason, welcome to All of It.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did you realize that you wanted to write this book or that you needed to write this book?
I realized that I wanted to write this book, I would say, finally and completely, when my wife got pregnant again. It was about 6 months after the accident. I had been writing constantly.
You're a writer.
Yes, but I've been
writing. But you're writing personally, right?
Yes, I've been writing just for myself to process. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, a therapist that I'd been seeing for grief and trauma had sort of remarked offhand that she was surprised I was writing, because apparently at the stage I was at of grief is an unusual time for people to write full sentences. And I think I made a weird mental note somewhere. Huh, I wonder if there's a reason why this part of my brain didn't shut off. And so I started keeping a journal more purposefully after that. And when my wife, Stacy, got pregnant, I said, okay, I'm writing a book. And this is how I'm going to sort of balance the scales in my mind and in my heart and in our family and get ready for another child. It became this massive project. I couldn't have loaded more stakes on it if I tried, like for myself and for us. But yeah, that was sort of how I decided.
When you went back and looked at those journal entries, mm-hmm. can you see what was the evolution of the entries?
Well, it was sort of, in some ways, the journey of the book, just slower, more arduous, more painful, and more, you know, mundane, the way that you write things for yourself. Yeah. And then you decide which of those things. It was interesting telling the story, because in the act of telling the story, I told it as if I wasn't the person at the center and that it wasn't happening to me. And there was something very therapeutic about that act. And in some ways, that's what perspective is, right? We go through something, mm-hmm. it seems like it's happening only to us, no matter what the tragedy or the event is. And only in telling the story as it happened in the world are we able to live in the world again. And so for me, I think I looked at my journals and I said, all right, these six paragraphs were just me wailing to myself on a rough day, and I needed them. But nobody else needs them. They don't belong in anyone else's story. They're only for me. And so what in here is a book or belongs in a book? What here is a story for others and what here is for me? And I think that the book was something I crafted and the journal was sort of the source water I drew it from, if that makes any sense.
When you think about this is for the book, I'm getting the sense that you wrote the book for yourself, but you also wrote it for other people. Is that the case?
I think it's sort of expanded outward, mm-hmm. right? It starts with me. I'm the one moved to write it. And then there's the question of why. And that becomes sort of a larger circle. And that incorporates my wife, my, at that point, unborn child who I did not know the sex of, would be my son, Harrison. Mm-hmm. It was for him. It was for Greta. And then outward from there, yeah, it was for my mother-in-law, Susan, who was on that bench. And it was basically for our family in a way, because our story had been told. The nature of Greta's accident was newsworthy. So Greta's picture was in the front page of the Daily News the day after we left the hospital. There was a lot of our story that had been told without us there to tell it. And then outward from there, totally. Why am I sharing this story with the world? Do I know that I have something blazingly important that only I can say? No one knows that. I hope that my story will be helpful. And I wouldn't have offered it if I didn't have that deep hope.
My guest is Jason Green. The name of his book is Once More We Saw Stars. So you start the book, page one, it's the accident.
Yeah.
When did you realize how serious Greta's injury was?
I would say that, sadly, I think we had a very early intuition when we saw her in the ER. We drove up the FDR to the hospital and went to the ER, and I saw her on the table. And frankly, there was some part of me that registered the seriousness of it even without knowing the specifics yet. I had this feeling that nothing about our lives would be the same. And I started trying to call my family to tell them. And I didn't know what I was telling them exactly, mm-hmm. but I knew the nature of it was grave. And then they took her in for a CAT scan to see the nature of her brain injuries. And while we waited for that and waited, we finally got up and learned she'd been rushed to surgery because she had a brain bleed. So it was a series of moments along this path. I think that was another moment where we sort of saw the receding hope that our lives might revert back to normal recede even further. It was a matter of hours before we were told that her prognosis was fatal. And so that was the final sort of archway we passed under to enter into this sort of new universe. So it was not a very long time.
And in that time, which I found really interesting in the book, was you're going through what your life might be like if she's got a debilitating brain injury, and what's mm-hmm. that, and we can do this, and we can, like, you're already mm-hmm. planning, mm-hmm. but you get to that point, and you're like, oh my God, this is the plan ends, because mm-hmm. this is the reality of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was really interesting to be in your brain for that minute.
I wanted to be very honest about that. One of the things I wanted this book to do was to give the texture of thoughts and life in this moment. I felt like narrating what you think in this moment would be valuable to people who have never been in this moment. You know, what were you thinking? And I had a weird ability to recall exactly what I was thinking. And I just wanted this book to be as honest as humanly possible.
You're really honest about something that it just makes me want to change the system in some way, because you and your wife make a decision to donate Greta's organs. Mm-hmm. Your wife is like, there must be a reason for this, to mm-hmm. try to help someone else. And the process is terrible. I'm just going to use the word terrible. Like, what you have to go through right after your daughter has died to mm-hmm. try to do the right thing. Not the right thing. To try to help someone else.
Right.
What were you thinking during that moment? Did you ever just want to say, like, forget it, we're not doing this?
No, and I also want to be careful about this, because we would never have done anything different. Mm-hmm. We would never go back and change our decision to donate her organs. And again, I think my description of the pain of that process was all part of the desire for honesty. There was something illuminating, I'm sure, in learning the mundane questions that parents have to answer. I wasn't out to get the organization.
No, I didn't get that at all.
Or to shed a light on, I wasn't trying to change anything. I, at no point, was surprised by how difficult it was. When you think about how complicated and bureaucratic it is to adopt a child, for instance, how much paperwork is involved, and then how painfully intimate the procedure we were talking about was.
Yeah.
To me, there was something unspeakable, but also oddly fascinating about that. There's this sort of contrast between just the most visceral, literally visceral thing, and then this form that you have to check every box on. I thought there was something there to be explored.
I don't even know you, and I wanted to protect you.
Thank you.
In reading that, I really felt like, gosh, I want to be an advocate for this couple in this moment. My guest is Jason Green. The name of the book is Once More, We Saw Stars. You and your wife decided to stay in New York City after all. Why did you decide to stay? Some people might have pulled up roots and just made a new life somewhere else.
We talked about just that, actually, in the weeks after Greta's death. We said, can we stay here? You know? And I remember talking to a member of my family afterward, and I made a joke, weirdly. I could still joke. I think that was interesting to learn. And I joked to him. I said, well, the most New Yorkers live here. And I love New Yorkers. I think we live here because of the people who live here. This is our community. These are the people who helped us through the tragedy. What happened was meaningless and random, but I don't think it was meaningless and random in a way that could never have happened in another city in the world.
Right.
Death. Violent death is by nature meaningless and random. So we stared that desire hard in the face, and it's not like that thought went away months later. We were still thinking about it. And my therapist, again, not to name check her twice, but this is the grief process, right? My therapist said, you know, I have met with people after trauma who leave and people who stay, and nobody is wrong. And she says, I've been seeing you for a while now, and you seem like someone who's going to stay, you know. And that was just reaffirmed for us in our guts. We didn't want to leave. This was our world. We'd already lost so much. We didn't want to lose our community, too.
You also, though, you are floating around for a while. You leave the family home, and you're doing the Airbnb thing, and you're trying to, you're sort of untethered physically. And I got a sense that you were also sort of untethered emotionally, that really was a manifestation of what was going on inside.
Well, yeah, I think we felt completely rootless. And so we decided to cut the strings and sort of see what it felt like to really do that. You know, we didn't want to live in our apartment where the only home Greta had ever known was. We didn't want to walk around those corners every day. We made, a oddly rational decision in the wake of the trauma to do that. You know, the grief books tell you not to do anything too drastic, but we kind of weighed that and we said, well, no one really knows what they, you know, what we need. You know, it's just a recommendation. So screw it. Let's do this. I hope that's okay to say. And, basically we went for it. And in that process, we sort of found ourselves diving into the unknown. We were already there. We needed our surroundings to change. And yeah, I don't think we planned to be homeless for several weeks. It just sort of worked out that way. But there was a way in which it eerily mirrored our internal directionlessness, yes, especially in those first few months.
Greta's death was widely covered. Mm-hmm. It was, in, as you said, in the papers. Mm-hmm. The New York Times did a follow-up without letting you know. You have to just find it in the paper. What was it? How did you deal with the public nature of this?
Well, I think it was both incredibly difficult to be known and by strangers about this intimate thing that had happened. You know, we're sort of people who circle the wagons around our family. We don't love, you know, but I should say that there was a lot of comfort to be drawn from that as well as grieving parents. I mean, we met many grieving parents who had nobody to comfort them at all. And they had to make it through their trauma and their tragedy basically alone. Maybe they went back to work and maybe there was a basket for them with flowers in it and maybe that was the end of it. You know, you don't really know what people have to go through to make it through their trauma. And so Stacy and I were very careful to remember that what we were receiving was both a complication and a sort of gift. It was a sort of tribute to Greta's memory, and we were aware that we were being supported, even if it was by strangers.
Were you approached, or did anyone reach out who's been in a similar situation?
Yes.
9/11 victims' families, people who dealt with the death of a loved one that was a public announcement in a way.
Yes. I'm still receiving those messages to this day. We received a handwritten note from a woman whose daughter had died from a piece of falling masonry 37 years prior to Greta's accident, because it is such a strange and freakish incident. And yes, we hear from parents whose children died violently, and it's an awful club that nobody wishes to be a member of, but there's comfort in knowing that someone else can lead you through it once you're there.
Or might have some understanding, because people try to reach out to you about, oh, my loved one passed away, but nobody's really going to, I mean, at least those people have, you can look at them and think, you know, a little bit more than the average person expressing.
You know what we learned, though, is that grief is pretty universal. Grief is pretty universal, and I think that helped us. Our grief wasn't so specialized that we needed only people who had experienced our kind of trauma to help us. People helped us from all walks of life, you know? There's something very comforting about that.
My guest is Jason Green, and the name of his book is Once More, We Saw Stars. You and your wife went through some different methods, some different ways to try to deal with your grief, try to figure out what's next, figure out who you are, what your family is going to be. And in one instance, you were, Kripalu Institute. And there is a woman there who's a medium. And you had this, what seemed like a really profound experience with this person. What did she say that gave you comfort or made you feel like I'm in the right place being with this woman?
It was more about her effect on everyone else in the room than it was about what she specifically said. It was the fact that everyone there seemed like they were connecting to their own deepest feelings of grief. And it didn't really matter to me, rationally speaking, what was strictly happening. The experience was emotionally authentic. Do I know that when she stopped and said, I'm seeing someone, I'm seeing your brother, he died of an overdose, can you please stand up? Do I know that that was a message from a spirit? Of course not. You know, do I believe it? I don't know that I would even ascribe belief to it, because belief is a kind of decision that you make rationally. It was something very emotional. I saw the person who she addressed be healed on some level, if only to be put in touch with his grief on a new way. And I think that was how we felt about that experience. It was an opportunity for connection. And that's how we saw everything that we went sort of sought out. Because some of it was more mystical than we were comfortable with as people.
I get a real insight into why you and your wife are together, that you guys have like this certain connection. And some of it is there are moments of laughter and just of like, oh, this couple,
yeah,
they get each other.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted there to be some humor in the book, despite the fact that it's about a tragedy, because anytime that you sort of don't know what you're doing, there's going to be an opportunity for comedy. When you're trying to do something and you fail, that's the definition of comedy, basically. And we were stumbling around for a while there, trying to make sense of our spiritual sort of vocabulary and trying to develop one, frankly. We hadn't really devoted the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there were moments where the two of us were sort of like the kids in the back of the class, you know?
There's definitely, yes. You've got this, you're very chill, you're very, not necessarily soft-spoken, but I'm listening to you speak and then I remember reading about how angry you could become. Did your emotions scare you?
Terrified me, oh God.
Yeah.
The fact that I could get that angry was in itself traumatizing to me. I didn't know this could live inside of me. I didn't know I could be this angry. I mean, I compare it to cancer at one point in the book, because I think that's how I felt. I felt, this was the sort of self-pity also mingling with the anger. I felt afflicted, you know? And but it was a way of, for me, it was a primal way, but a way of reckoning with the fact that I had never been comfortable with anger. And frankly, everyone is angry at one point or another. This is a particularly ghastly thing to have to be angry about. But in a way, it was what drew out that side of me. I'm allowed to be angry. It doesn't make me a monster. And I think I had to actually learn that very simple lesson.
How's Harrison?
He's hilarious. He's fantastic. He's an enormous pain. He's delightful. He is very in the present and he loves spending time with his whole family. He is absolutely wonderful. And yes, we're very tired.
Yes, parents are tired people.
In a good way.
My guest has been Jason Green. The name of his memoir is Once More, We Saw Stars. Jason, thanks for coming by the studio.
Thanks for having me.
This is All of It on WNYC.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.